Southern Fried Security Podcast with Martin and Steve, Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while Yvette's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of Southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 200 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. My name is Martin Fisher. So glad that you could join us for what I think is going to be a pretty interesting episode where we close out our discussion on security strategy. Joining me, and I'm so glad he's here tonight, is my good friend Andy Willingham. Andy, how are things?
Hey, it's good to be back. It seems like it's been forever.
So, it has been forever.
Yeah, things are well. Just been good. Really, really busy. So I'm hoping to slow down a bit now.
Also joining us from her secure, undisclosed location somewhere inside the perimeter is my good friend Yvette Johnson. Yvette, how are things?
I am well, and on episode 200, I feel so old and wore out.
Shush you. And also joining us, the expectant father, Joseph Sicoli. So I asked you before if you were nervous, and you said no, but I don't know, dude.
You keep asking that question, and I keep getting more and more nervous the more times you ask it. So by the end of this podcast, if you ask me again, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm like freaking out over here. But so far, still just waiting.
Just waiting. She will arrive when it's her time to arrive. Episode 200, guys. Let's do this.
Excellent. So episode 200, we are continuing our conversation on building a security strategy. So first and foremost, I want to point everybody back to episode number 198, where we started by defining sort of what a security strategy is versus a policy. And Yvette, can you kind of sum that up for us real quick?
Yeah, this can get really tricky because strategy is thought out planning versus policy are binding statements. Policy is what your legal jumps into. It's what you can be sued against. A strategy is your planning. It's what your organization is trying to accomplish with its security program.
Perfect. So then in episode number 199, we started addressing the question of, okay, so how do you make a security strategy? And in the show notes, you should be able to see, you might not see the A's and B's, but you'll definitely see the first two points of the first question we addressed in episode 199 was, understanding the business of your business. We also addressed knowing who your stakeholders really are. And we talked a little bit about culture. So today we're going to kind of wrap up the outline that Martin put together for us. We're going to talk a little bit about what your capability, which is tech plus service times process. We're going to talk about crawl, walk, and run. And then finally, we'll wrap everything up with it takes a village. So Martin, I think at this point, can you please explain to those of us who failed college algebra so many times they can't even count it anymore, what capability equals tech plus service times process kind of means?
Sure. So I think one of the things, as I've been bouncing around the security world for a long time, is we have a natural tendency at conferences and in conversations with vendors that we start talking about a problem we're having and we immediately want to start talking about technology. You know, we talk about the DLP technology we've deployed or, you know, our IPS or our firewalls. And I'm not saying the conversations about technology aren't important. What I'm saying is they're not, that's not a strategic conversation. If you think about from a CISO perspective, what you're interested in doing is developing capabilities. These are things that you do to solve problems. So if you think about it, the technology by itself, blinky boxes they consume electricity and they turn cool air in the data center into warm air. And there are so many different choices. You cannot swing a dead cat without hitting some sort of next generation, artificial intelligence, machine learning, something or the other that is guaranteed to solve all your problems. And it may or may not. It's going to depend. The other thing you need to worry about is the service. And that's the stuff you have to do. This is stuff that's like, by regulation, policy, or the company just says you have to. Think about the prescriptive controls inside of PCI, the administrative and technical controls that exist inside of HIPAA. Think about Sarbanes-Oxley. Those are the specific services you have to provide. But there's also services like malware detection, right? You need to be able to detect malware. You need to be able to secure email. And then there's process. You know, process is how you do the stuff. And process, this is one of the big things that I think is challenging inside of security, is that a lot of times we look at the technology and we look at the demo or do the POC, and security is a one-off. And people forget that things have to be repeatable and consistent. And I think part of the reason that we've had challenges in the world of IT operations is that a lot of times we're not repeatable and consistent, and we stray more toward it being an art than a science. But at the end of the day, capabilities is what brings value to the organization. The fact that I have vendor L or vendor C firewalls doesn't matter. It does not matter to the chief executive officer. What matters is I've secured the network demarcation point. And you can get tech and service selection, and that's important. You want to make sure that you're choosing optimal technology. And the optimal technology for my hospital may be different than the optimal technology for someone else. And the service selection, the things that you decide to do internally or the things you decide to outsource, that's important as well. But the biggest improvements come from improving process. You can have suboptimal technology, and you can be doing, you know, suboptimal services. But if you have a great process, you're probably actually delivering more value than someone with a really expensive blinky box and no idea what they're doing it for. Does that track?
Absolutely. You know, that definitely goes back, I think, especially the tech part. I want to go back and look. I'll see if I can find the episode and put it in the show notes. But I know we've talked in some of our previous episodes as well about getting the most out of your security spending and things along those lines.
Right. That's something that Andy's absolutely passionate about, right? You know, Andy has been, I'm going to call it blessed, to have worked in organizations where security spend is hard to come by. And I've worked in organizations like that. I think everyone should at some point in their career. And you had to learn how to stretch that dollar as far as you possibly could in order to deliver the services and develop the processes and get that capability on.
Well, and I'm in a very interesting position, whereas I'm not dealing with a processes that are already there. I'm creating the processes. We are such a young company, and you know, moving out of startup into small company, this is the opportunity, and we're developing the strategy as we go based off of, you know, current landscape of what's going on with our business, but versus also what's going on in security. And this is our opportunity to get it right instead of implementing a procedure or a process or a firewall or a policy that we know is simply not going to work in not only our organization, but in any security strategy. And that it's actually kind of exciting for me because I've been able to see, I've been spent so much time in organizations where I saw that it wasn't done correctly. And there was so much red tape involved in where they were in their current strategy that backing out of it was just going to be so painful. This gives me the opportunity to do it right and to implement something that I know is going to work versus where I know things have completely gone wrong in the past.
So moving us right along, we'll move into the next of the cryptically titled sections for you, for Martin's outline. And we'll talk about crawl, walk, run. Now, I don't think that you're trying to give us parenting advice specifically here. Can you kind of explain what you're looking at here?
Sure. So, you know, ArmorGuy's maxim of life is start small and iterate larger. You know, Vet, I know you've seen this too in your consulting days. And Andy, you and I have talked about this in the past where, you know, an organization spends a whole lot of time building this massive piece of infrastructure, this massive security project, and they try to eat the whole elephant at once. And on day one, mm-hmm. it just collapses in on itself.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than an organization trying to boil the ocean.
Oh, you used that phrase.
Bingo.
Bingo. And so for me, I think the success that I've had in the past has been starting small and then, you know, essentially it's wash, rinse, repeat. So for example, you know, DLP projects are scary because there's so much data classification that has to happen, and there's so much business rule, you know, comprehension that has to happen, that if you try to do it in too large an environment, you either blow everything up by breaking the way people do their work, or you essentially do what we all did when we first got our very first generation of IPSs. You turn off blocking and then you stop ignoring the feed, and you failed. Versus going, you know what, we're going to go after this one high-risk business group, and we're going to spend time with them, and we're going to get them right, and then we're going to go to the next high-risk business group. And you just start biting your way through the organization. It takes longer, absolutely. But if you do it right, you are actually adding significantly more value faster, and you're not destroying any credibility the security organization may have had by blowing people up out of the gate on this huge project where you didn't just maybe blow up, you know, accounts payable for a day. You blew up everybody. You know, those are career limiting events for a CISO, and it can really harm the effectiveness of your overall program. So start small, iterate larger, gain some knowledge, gain some confidence. Because if you try to do too much out of the gate, it's not that you may fail, you will fail.
And then you're going to potentially get into a situation that goes back to an episode that we did earlier this year on, you know, I think we called it security debt or whatever, where you're going to end up getting into, you're going to deploy stuff that you can't support.
Right.
And, you know, then you're just going to have blinky boxes running, collecting data that nobody does anything with, or, you know, they're seeing things that need to be acted upon, and you don't have the staff to do it. So if you don't start small, prove yourself, build your case to be able to grow your team so that you can add new technologies, and get these pieces in place to actually get a mature program. Not only mature from a process standpoint, but where you are mature from the standpoint that you're able to do all of the things that every CISO dreams about doing.
Right.
Yeah. And that was episode number 192, Security Waste. I was able to find that link. So.
Wow. Look at him.
I know.
It's like Alex Trebek.
Now, the other big thing on this particular topic, and Yvette, I know you and I have seen this both when we work together, and then I know you've seen it in your consulting world, is where you have to define success criteria at each stage of a capability development. And that success criteria has to allow for error and for learning.
I mean, it goes back to you talking about starting small. I mean, as soon as you have defined what your strategy is, you immediately want to go in and do all the things, right? But you have to, you know, success is doing it almost in phases. And it's okay to do that phase one of your strategy with, you know, accounts payable, and then, you know, implement it somewhere else with the next group, with the next group, with the next group. I think we all want to show these big giant steps in these metrics that we can show our CEO, like, look what I did this year, instead of, you know, and then that's when it fails. If you try to do too much in a short amount of time with everybody, that's when it fails and you're going to accomplish nothing, versus saying, look, we're going to do this in a phased approach and I'm going to accomplish this year. You're bringing that organization so much further with just doing those little steps than trying to implement everything at one time.
Now, Yvette, you made an interesting point, and Martin, I want to ask you this question. She mentioned that you may want to be showing things to your CEO that you got all these big things done. How do you manage expectations that when you build the security strategy, immediately all your security problems go away?
That is one of the CISO's hardest jobs. I think what you have to do is manage that expectation set, and it has to be geared toward how the organization views risk. I think it's, you know, in my career and in talking with folks, not just in healthcare, but in other industries, by being very transparent with, what we're doing is difficult. We want to do it well. We're going to take a risk-based approach. We're going to rank rate all of the areas that need this capability deployed. and which one are we going to get the most value out of? And we're going to do that one and do it right. Mm-hmm. I think people underestimate how appreciative CEOs, COOs, CFOs are when IT people in general and security people specifically acknowledge that disrupting the business is a bad thing, breaking things is a bad thing, and they're going to take time and work as part of the leadership team to recognize that you just can't break production. You just can't bring all the call centers down. You can't stop, you know, marketing from sending email out. That you're gonna recognize those sensitivities, and you're gonna work very carefully to bring the security to the environment. Absolutely, that's what we're charged with doing it. But you're gonna do it in a way that doesn't break the rest of the world. I mean, it kind of gets summed up. I had a company commander in the Army. You know, his expression was, well, to make it a little more safe for work, one aw crap wipes out 500 attaboys. So avoid the aw crap moment and don't break things. Sometimes you will. It's going to happen. But if you developed a track record of being someone who's sensitive to what happens in the business, when you have that inevitable mistake, one, because you're doing things small, you've only broken something small and it's relatively easy to fix. And two, if you've deployed it successfully 9 times and there was a small mistake, you're going to get a little bit of grace from the organization because they realize that mistakes happen and you're doing it in a responsible way.
Got it. So, all right, now your last point here is it takes a village. Can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, and Andy, I know you and I have been living in this world since we both joined healthcare. Security is not an island, more so in healthcare than almost any industry. Security is important, and everyone acknowledges that. But said elsewhere, the business of most businesses is not being secure. And interdependence with business units is key. I mean, if you don't acknowledge and embrace that interdependence, you are the foreigner, you're the other, and you're going to be rejected. I mean, and I know this is going to probably, you know, some folks it's maybe pushing a button, but believe it or not, you need those marketing drones. Because those marketing drones are part of the process that generates revenue for your company. And that revenue is what pays for your blinky boxes and your salaries and those high dollar consultants that you bend to help you do the things you do. You are interdependent with them. They need the services that you bring to the table. They need the capability you bring to the table. You need the capability they bring to the table. Maybe not directly, but indirectly. And I think we as security people need to, in some cases, get over ourselves and acknowledge that. And it's amazing to me that when, you know, I have folks on my team who demonstrate this with business units, the level of cooperation that we get and the level of support that we get just goes through the roof. It's that whole thing of, you know, are we bringing security to them or are we inflicting it on them? And if you're not inflicting, it's not going to get you anything, but bringing it to them and getting them to buy in and do what they can, which means you're going to have to adjust your plan a little bit. I mean, you can walk into a med-surg unit and have a great idea as to how to do something, and they're going to tell you, well, that's a fantastic idea, Mr. CISO, but the way we actually do that here, we can't do it that way. You can pause and go, wow, okay, so what can we do? Because remember, the idea is the capability. It's not the process that you defined. It's the capability. So you have a tech. You have a service that you want to provide. Now we're going to adjust the process. And that works. Now, what makes it even more interesting from an interdependence perspective and it taking a village is, and this is going to be a topic for another episode some days, I strongly believe that security operations is a subset of IT operations. So in most organizations, it's not set up that way. Security ops and IT ops are generally two different organizations. So when you start doing this kind of stuff and you start doing projects and you start building capability, that relationship with IT operations is going to be kind of weird. It's going to be wonky because you're kind of more than almost any other group. You're playing in their space, right? You're putting up, you know, a new jungle gym on the playground and telling them that they can't play on it. That's hard. And it takes a whole lot of relationship building and a whole lot of confidence with your IT operations leadership for that to happen in an effective way. And I found in Microdesk one of the most challenging things to do is to create that really positive relationship with IT operations. And candidly, I mean, generally when the problems come up, the problem is the security people. I've made mistakes in the past that I wish I could have changed in working with IT ops folks. I could have made things a lot easier by approaching it a little bit differently.
You know, I was going to go back to your security cannot exist as an island comment. I think security professionals, by nature of their personality, love to be on their own island. If they can sit in a almost like a sock by themselves and not have to interact with the business units, I feel like they are so happy. But it's really your downfall of exactly what you said. You cannot function like that.
Well, if you want to only be a SOC doctor, sure. But if you ever want to be in security management, if you ever want to be a CISO, you can't. You know, 2/3 of my job is selling my program to people outside the security department.
That is what I spend my day doing and I am not this introvert. I am an extrovert. So I thrive on going to my engineering team, my IT ops team, and saying, hey, guys, this is what I need. You know, and I see their faces when I walk in the room. They look at me like, there's Yvette, and I know she's going to make us work. But I've established such a positive relationship with them that it's almost like they don't mind. I mean, and now they get it. Now they come to me and say, hey, we're thinking about doing this, but we want to run, you know, the security architecture by you first and get your buy-in on it. Or what implications do we have from regulations perspective or, you know, customer's perspective? And that warms my heart, actually, that they are thinking, that I've got them to think about that. But it's because I have purposely, and not just me, I mean, my bosses, we've purposely gone out and almost like done a dog and pony show about security and you know, try to remind them that this is important to our customers and to our organization. And there's a way to do this right. And so it warms my heart when they come to me and say, hey, we're going to do this, but we want to run it by you first or get your input on it before we go. If they will do that, I am so happy. And, you know, I'm hardly ever going to say no. But if you come to me at the last second and say, hey, by the way, we're implementing this, I just need we're going to keep going. And I'm almost always going to say no. I need more time. I need to look at this. You can't do this.
Yep, yep, yep.
So I think that kind of hits all of the major points, Martin, that you had kind of written down. Do you have any closing thoughts around how to build a security strategy?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. For the folks who are listening to the podcast who aren't CISOs yet or are evaluating if that's the path they want to take, strategy is what CISOs do. Now, again, CISO, that's not necessarily a title. I mean, you can have someone who has the title of a senior engineer who essentially functions as a CISO, especially in a smaller organization. But it's what they do. And I think we who lead security organizations, we who are, you know, thought leaders in security, we do ourselves and our organizations a disservice by focusing on the technology, by focusing on the tactical, and not thinking through strategy and not communicating strategy. You know, I see in the show notes, Joseph is written, you know, where do you look for more info? Gosh, I wish I knew. I think there's an understanding now that the strategy is important. And I think the biggest thing you do is you find folks that you can talk to who have done it. You find outlets like this podcast, but you've got to go search people out and start thinking through that. And honestly, I mean, at all the regional conferences, at B-Sides events, whatever, let the organizers know, hey, I want to have talks that talk about this. I mean, it's great to see the talk where they're dropping O-Day, but this is really important as well because I think it's a skill set that a lot of folks can do if they want to, but it's something that we don't talk about very often.
And if you are listening to this and you're like, but guys, there was that one talk at that one B-Sides that one year in this one country, please send us a tweet at SFS Podcast on Twitter so that we can mention it in a future show or something along those lines as a resource for folks who are looking for other resources.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. This is an art form, implementing this strategy, and not everybody can do it. And I feel like the people who really know how to do it well, and it's interesting to watch them do it. And it makes you, when you work for them or work with them, it makes you excited to work with them when you know they're doing it right.
Right. I mean, because strategy and vision are tied together, and people get excited about a compelling vision. And that's a topic for another cast. So, guys, I guess that wraps up episode 200. Andy, I never this far. Next episode 201, we are having conversations about what we're going to do. We definitely want to have a little bit of a look back at the things that we did well, and things we didn't do well, including the one episode that must never be named. But on behalf of Andy Willingham, Joseph Zaccoli, Yvette Johnson, and the absent Steve Reagan, who is grading papers, I'm Martin Fisher. So glad you joined us, and we'll be talking to you again really soon.
Thanks.
Good night, y'all.